Well, back in early 2017, I sat in a seat in Peter Katz's office at the Cathedral. In fact, the very same seat I'm sitting in right now, and I looked him in the eye and said, "I love the way you speak about the mystery. Would you ever think about starting a podcast?" Moments later, he wandered down the hallway, brought Sue in. The three of us had our first conversation and thought this could be a project worth exploring. And here we are now, 100 episodes on from that journey. 7 years later, we sit here as we welcome you to the 100th episode special of the On The Way podcast. Back in Peter Katz's office on a Thursday night to reflect back on what's been a pretty extraordinary journey. And Peter, as we're sitting here, we've just had a meal together, the three of us. It's hard to believe what this journey has been out of such a small question that started it all off.
That's for sure. And it goes to show out of little things, big things grow. And I've become increasingly a believer in synchronicity. That if one attends to what's going on, all sorts of wonderful connections arise. Mm. So on that day, Sue and I had literally a conversation about getting some of what we enjoyed doing in the Cathedral into a wider audience just 1 hour before you came and said, "Have you ever thought of having a podcast?"
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. It's remarkable. Sue, what are your memories of that day?
Yeah, I remember because the night before I'd gone out and ordered some sound equipment, which turned out to be not the best idea because... So Dom walks in with much better sound equipment. But I'd ordered this because, you know, my reflection had been that spirituality is always a long, slow conversation. Yeah, you know, it's something that there was so much to explore. And I know because I used to get to sit down working here, get to sit down and talk to Peter for an hour a week. And we'd just, you know, conversations would go everywhere. And I think, you know, well, that's all very good for me. But people, even if you come to the Cathedral, like you might get a 10-minute sermon and they're great sermons. But it's not that long, slow, let's explore life and really big questions of meaning. And so it seemed like there was a gap. And I'd often say, we don't have a message problem, we have a communication problem. Yes. And, you know, how can we actually have the beauty of these conversations in a forum where people have the time and where people can choose when to listen, if they want to listen, if they want to turn off or not. And so the podcast conversation had started to emerge. I'd bought the sound equipment and then you walked in the door.
Look, it's remarkable, and I know from my perspective, it wasn't an idea I'd had the day before really or anything. It hit me in that one moment, and I just think about how many half thoughts I have or haven't said in my life with no clue just how much power they could actually have in terms of bringing something to life. And for those who have been listening to the podcast feed lately, we should mention there are still one or two more episodes to come from my Northern Hemisphere adventures, so stick around for them. But we thought it was worth breaking into that release schedule to reflect on a pretty significant milestone of 100 episodes of you know, all sorts of topics, all sorts of guests, a few live episodes that we've recorded, a couple of trips to the Byron Writers Festival, a few trips that I've had overseas, many Zoom episodes, a pandemic, a couple of other crises along the way. And here we are still, you know, having these conversations. And Peter, that seemed to me, as we reflect on this in the hour or so ahead, probably the best place to start was the naming of this podcast and how true that name has become. I mean, in a sense, it was a prophetic naming of the podcast because we sort of had a bit of a hunch, but 7 years on, we are still very much just on the way.
Well, yeah, we partly chose On The Way because we didn't want to use the word Christian because it gets so loaded. Mm. And the earlier followers of Jesus were known as the followers of the way. But for me, it's actually opened up the way way more than I ever thought it would. I think we were comparing notes a couple of weeks ago and thought we'd have this whole thing sorted in about 10 episodes. And I've just found myself through the podcast and the conversations with incredible people finding that the way is way richer. Mm. And it is definitely a way. It's a transformative, it's a long, slow walk that transforms one's entire being. And this podcast has been a really important part of my faith journey, and I have learnt so much. I've learnt so much about the complexity of life and faith, and at the same time so much about the simplicity of life and faith
yeah.
and how that simplicity and that complexity have to dialogue in order to find our way.
Yeah, and we might get to paradox a bit later on, because if there's one thing that keeps coming to mind for me over 100 episodes, it is how often I might so vividly affirm one thing is true in an episode, and then 10 episodes later with a different guest, it seems to be that I'm going, no, the other thing is true. And this dynamic between, you know, you can't pin the thing down. It's inherently complex. It's inherently yeah. more than one thing at the same time.
I think Christianity is a whole bunch of paradoxes held in tension. Mm. And when they're held in tension, you're on the way.
Yeah.
When you allow yourself to be dragged to one or other of the extremes of that paradox, you're off the way. Or you're exploring. Let's say you're exploring an interesting little sideline.
It's a side quest. I like that. And so if I asked you to reflect on what this journey has been like for you and how you feel its influence shaped, formed you over the last 7 or so years, is there a clear way to articulate that, or is it a bit beyond words?
I mean, that's a very big question, and it's one that probably as we go through this conversation we'll be exploring more fully. I think certainly the relationships are the key part of it. There is a sense of what we explore here together and the ideas that just pop and bounce around because of, you know, generally 3 of us and generally one more person who we are interacting with, and that dynamism that happens when you can get out of your own head and are able to see things really differently. So that's been a powerful thing. It's also the relationships. You know, I just want to thank everyone who's listened and supported the podcast in terms of, I mean, it's never been a financial thing because we really wanted it to always be free, but they've supported in getting in touch, you know, and the messages we've had from people. Thank you for the lovely people who've left reviews on Apple Podcasts and things. We haven't often said that, so wherever you've left your reviews, sometimes we haven't, you know, because we're all leading busy full-time working roles, and so you come around and every so often I find one I haven't seen before, so just thank you for your thoughts, and we just really appreciate that, because it's been a heap of fun for us, and just so enriching with the people we've met. But it's also enriching when you find, and in ministry work, that you find suddenly you're having a conversation with someone whose life has been, you know, they've been able to see things differently because it's intersected with something we've been talking about on the podcast, and they come to you and talk to you about it, and that's another layer of that relationship that it's felt very rich.
Yeah,
I think Sue's comment there about getting out of your own head is just so important. One of the themes we've explored a lot is we live in an individualistic culture, and we think we have to sort all of this out for ourselves. And the fact that in dialogue you actually encounter the other, and there's something, always something between the two when you're in dialogue. It's like there's always a third guest or someone who's mediating, and that allows us to go into places that we just cannot go by ourselves. And yet we still have this idea that you have to be self-made and you have to sort it out for yourself and you've got to do something with your life. And this podcast for me has proved more and more that the whole thing is relational, and you become who you are through the input and the gifts of other people.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. And I think that's been one of the most rich and rewarding things, is the relationship between the 3 of us and the relationship as well with, as you said, Sue, the listeners and all the wonderful people who joined us for a conversation. There've been diverse conversations of all sorts of issues. Obviously, early on in the podcast, Australia was in the middle of the marriage equality conversation, and we had conversations around that. We had conversations around a global pandemic that popped up, conversations around Australia's Indigenous history and the great horrors that still have not really been looked at there. And then all sorts of other different conversations have popped up along the way as well. And something that I keep reflecting on as I think about this journey, I'm quite a nostalgic person, so I have been reflecting on the podcast a bit. But one thing I keep coming back to is how it's kind of evidence of how this whole thing works, in a sense, that when you go in with some very clear-cut idea and with all this sort of gusto and we're going to make this thing happen, that often the times in my life I've done that, the thing hasn't really worked all that well. And yet when you loosely, lightly sort of just follow a bit of a hunch and sort of follow an idea out, a thread out, and go, I wonder what would happen if we tried that. Oh, could we give that a go? That actually the building blocks of a life of meaning, depth, and relationship are tiny little hunches along the way that you just decide to follow. That there's been nothing. We didn't sit down with a whiteboard and a big pot of coffee 7 years ago and go, this will be episode 61. And like, I think you said this, Peter, one day we'll record the last episode of this podcast and we probably won't know we've recorded the last episode. It's, I don't think we've ever been planned more than two or three episodes ahead at a time. So it's been such a story of emergence, hasn't it, Sue? And for us, for our listeners, and maybe a sign of how emergence does really shape all of our lives.
And how the meetings that we've had in meeting and the encounters we've had with people then shapes our life. And I know it's changed my life in different ways and even certainly has shaped things like when you go back into my own communities, it shapes the way we preach, the way we interact. And just, you know, that seeing something from a new perspective, then off we run in a slightly different direction. And it's just each time something and possibilities have come up and it's just been a fun ride.
It has been. And speaking of possibilities, I don't know if I've shared this story in its fullness on the podcast, but this podcast here has been pivotal in a career change really for me. That when we started, I was just working as a radio announcer, and then Sue, a friend of yours who you'd studied with, heard the podcast, invited me to speak at the school that she was a chaplain at. And one thing led to another, and I've spent the last few years working there full time in the faith and spirituality space. And so, in a sense, that's another example of just half a hunch, half an idea, half a sense of, well, what would that be like? Following the thread, and then the way is made. And I know an episode we do have coming up is with Brian McLaren that I recorded in Florida, and he has this great book that many will know, We Make the Road by Walking. And I think this podcast is an example of that. We've made this road by walking. It's been very playful, very experimental, very uncertain, and very fun, hasn't it, Peter?
It has. And the playfulness, I think, is really part of it. We often say that actually we don't care if anyone listens because yes. We just have such a good time making the podcast. And it's been really, I know for me, it's been incredibly formative, and it's been... something of a rock in terms of being sustainable and supported. And so it just points to how deeply relational all of our life needs to be. And it unmasks a whole heap of the lies that the culture operates on.
Yeah. And you mentioned this earlier, and I know I've said this to you before as well, this sense that I think five episodes in, we'd covered gender and God, non-dualism, science and religion. Maybe we'd looked at interfaith. And I genuinely remember, I think it was the science and religion episode that I sent back to you or to Sue to upload. And I thought, we are two or three episodes away from cracking this thing. We are just about there, I reckon. A few more good episodes. If we cover that thread and that thread, we're going to have the meaning of life. We're going to have figured this thing out. And instead, I feel like with each episode... I think this is a bit riffing on a quote of yours, Peter, but with each episode, it's like 100 more meters have been revealed of the mystery. I think about something my principal at the school said a while ago is that with each year he's lived, he feels he's gotten happier and more confused. And there's an element with each episode we've recorded, I feel I've maybe gotten a little bit happier and a little bit more confused. It's maybe this is, in a sense, addressing our Western need to resolve the thing, answer the thing, lock the thing down, get the concrete answer. And what this thing has done is maybe it started, at least for me, energetically with that pursuit. But that pursuit has sort of been abandoned along the way as we've sort of just enjoyed good stories and good conversations. Is that the emotional experience that it's been for you guys, that it has sort of been this almost a... more of an unwinding or an unraveling or a surrendering into conversation and story rather than trying to answer these big questions, just sort of living alongside them?
Yeah, and certainly for me, one of the beautiful things is having three involved, which means that it actually becomes a whole bunch of different conversations. So there are times when you and Sue are in deep dialogue and I'm sort of sitting off to the side as... almost an observer, but I find that space actually then allows other stuff to bubble up in me, and then a bit like the Trinity having a dance, really, the sort of the baton gets passed, and it's only because I have been privileged to listen to your conversation, that I'm actually able to make a new comment, because it's something that's actually been created in me by what you're doing. And so there's a sort of beautiful perichoresis sort of thing about it that reminds me of Rublev's Trinity, where the three angelic beings are separate, but they're also intertwined. And Rublev does it with colour and the fact that their limbs sort of cross over each other, and they look separate, but the more you look at it, the more intertwined they are. And there's a sense in which we're sort of one being, and I know that when we do podcasts with one of us missing, it certainly feels very different. And so there's something really almost, it's almost like it is a creation, that it's a creature.
Yeah.
It's a creature that is not just made up. It's something that's more than the three of us.
Yes.
And I think that's how really good relationships actually work.
And the amount of times that I've left this office, Peter, or wherever we have recorded, and walked back to the car and just felt so alive and full of joy and full of energy and life. And it is as if you've just partaken in some sacred, wonderful experience, the flow that we often speak about. It's as if you've just been right in the midst of it. And I know from some of the wonderful messages we've heard from listeners that there's a sense that they're with us as well, as they're listening, maybe driving the car or walking the dog or whatever it might be, that there's a sense that they're right there in the midst of that flow with us.
Well, that goes back to Rublev's icon of the Trinity, because the three beings are sat around a four-sided table, a bit like we are now, and one of the sides is open. And it's believed that Rublev, in his original writing of the icon, placed a mirror on the fourth side of the table so that the viewer actually could see themselves as part of the picture. And so the Trinity is always inviting a fourth into its stance, because the quaternary is actually more stable than the Trinity. So it's actually always inviting someone in. So if we've had that effect on people, then that is a really beautiful thing, and it's a gift to us, because we actually need the fourth, which is actually making alive what I said before about it. We don't care if people listen. We actually do actually interact with, and those people do actually help create what we have become. And so they are genuine dialogue partners in the dance that is this podcast.
And I know I've quoted you both many times over the years. You've said something in a podcast, I take it away. I generally quote it for a couple of months, and so apologies for that. But one of yours, Sue, that I've loved is that one of the clearest ways you can tell something has the divine spirit at play is that everybody wins. And I feel as though, I think about where I was in 2017, perhaps where you were in 2017, Peter, where you were in 2017, where our listeners have been as well. And I think this whole experiment has been a beautiful story of an experience where it feels like everybody's won.
Everybody wins, yeah. And there's a counter to that too, that if you feel like you're pushing a heavy boulder uphill, you're probably doing it wrong. If it's in something that we're doing in the spirit or in God's economy, that's not what it feels like. You know, it's everybody wins. And I've gone through, and this conversation is not about us, but it is kind of cool to look at a couple of things and the way it's shaped, and the conversations have helped us to take the next step through a very changing life. And we've talked about things like a pandemic in the middle of things, but I was a newly ordained priest at the start when we kicked off, and I thought I was facilitating something between you two, you know, and that I was going to try and just sort of maybe I'd pick up my editing skills or something. So that was the original plan. But of course, I've gone through a divorce. We've then, you know, had some wonderful years here at the cathedral, and then moving on to my own parish with another incredible bunch of people, you know. And all this time, as the world's shifting and changing and we're shifting and changing, there is the sense that everybody wins through this as we kind of share all of that together, you know.
Yeah. And it's interesting because our personal stories will match many of the personal stories of people who've listened and engaged in the podcast along the way. It has felt like this. The amount of times, one of the things I've often reflected on is after we've recorded a number of episodes, I'll generally stop the recording. We all put the microphones down, and then there's kind of like a, oh, yeah. like in the
that
room.
Was cool.
Yeah, that was right. cool. And it's the conversation that follows. Sometimes it's hard to. How do you go, that was really good? You know, you just sort of look at each other and go, so busy weekend. Because it can be hard to pick up off the back of it. But those moments, the richness, the aliveness, the connection, it's, yeah, I think liberation is a word that comes to mind for me, because mm-hmm. so many of these conversations have been conversations that 8-year-old Dom, when he was in a more conservative tradition, mm-hmm. felt like he had to just push down and wrestle with. And you know, then maybe 15-year-old Dom thought, oh, well, there's no way it all fits for good, so I'm just going to pretend it does and grin and bear it. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly we're sitting in this circle and I'm able to say the thing that maybe I'd carried for 15 mm-hmm. years mm-hmm. and have mm-hmm. someone else go, yes, I felt that
yes,
too.
I felt that too.
That, yeah. That's been such a liberating yeah. experience.
And that what you're talking about too is truth-telling as well.
Yes, yes.
Allowing, and the church sadly has had a lot of time of not being a great truth-teller in some parts of life. And it's often in the things that we pretend aren't there, or you know, Brian McLaren, who's been a great, you know, friend of the podcast, you know, what he does is actually show clearly what the church is doing and be not afraid to state it, you know.
Yes.
So he will say things like, you know, I'm not concerned whether you're a Christian or not.
Yeah.
We are concerned, like this is about the way. Yeah. And about how we're traveling, and the conversation with Nadia Bolsvoba, that one I've had, you know, the church has been terrible at speaking truthfully about sex and sexuality.
Yes.
It's been terrible about naming what's actually real, you know, and that we haven't. I think it was Nadia herself who said, you know, the church has got to be concerned with actually what reality is.
Mm.
You know, I spoke to my mother's union group at Indooroopilly some years back about, their kids and grandkids having sex outside of marriage. You know, where's the point when the reality of what all of our stories are catches up to what the church isn't saying?
Yes.
And the relief that they were talking about, just like being able to talk about this for once and say, yes, of course. And I mean, that links to part of that truth telling is also the discomfort with the body. And a lot of our podcasts have talked about embodiment.
Mm.
We talk about relationships a lot, but a healthy embodiment, a healthy grounded spirituality that isn't about the afterlife, that's about life in the here and now, and what that means. The number of conversations I've had with women, particularly after that episode with Nadia, talking about what the church has robbed them of, but actually not just women too. There's been men as well who've, it is, I think she said in that one, you know, the idea of being complete abstinence and no sex before marriage at all. You know, the number of people that works for, and that some of the sexual harm that's done, and people that feel that they've been robbed of just their humanness. And, you know, and I think of James Allison saying, it's not a trap, you know. Mm. So this podcast has been able to declare not just about sex, but on a few levels, actually, you know, life, this God's not trying to catch us out doing the wrong thing.
Yes.
This is, you know, yeah. we're not being set up here in this human experience to want all the wrong things. This is, you know, this is not what it's about, and that we can actually be present in our bodies and be present in our communities, naming what the very real struggles are, not sweeping some under the carpet and being happy to talk about some and not others, but actually say what is real for us now, where is God in all of this, and how do we craft out, take responsibility for our lives, which is a God-given thing, I believe, you know, that how do we take responsibility for goodness?
Yeah.
How do we have that higher ethic that's about how can we be our best selves in all of these spheres, whether it's about how we gather as a community, how we do worship, whether it's about sex and sexuality, how do we, or any other aspect of relationships, what is the goodness that we are called into, that just talking about rules and not talking about a whole heap of other things that matter to us has prevented us being able to dialogue with, has prevented us to be able to imagine too.
Yeah, and I think what you've just said there is really interesting, because a lot of people have carried these questions, these restrictions for years and years and years, but there isn't the space in a Sunday gathering or whatever it might be to have the conversation. I mean, it's a bit awkward if you, you know, with Glenys over the cup of tea afterwards to ask Glenys about her sex life, you know. So you probably don't. You probably just go, well, I'm feeling this, but no one else here is articulating it, so it's just me. And I think what the podcast has done has been to stick with something for a good hour or so, to actually ask the questions you actually want to ask, and then to realize the shared human experience on so many fronts, which just liberates. I mean, I feel like I've always had that voice, and many of us, I think, do, that says, you know, you are uniquely, fundamentally messed up. It's what you're experiencing or feeling is uniquely, fundamentally broken in just you, mm-hmm. and the rest of the world's carrying on, having a wonderful old time. And I think those liberating moments when you share the thing that you've wondered, questioned, wrestled with, mm-hmm. and you are met with a, oh, yeah, me too. It's such an empowering, such a liberating, such a life-giving thing. And I don't know, these are things, some of the things we've spoken about, Sue, for us, for our listeners, have bound them in knots for decades.
Yes.
And one afternoon's conversation can feel like it at least begins just undoing those knots that have been there for so long now.
Oh, that's just a truth, because people will come and say, I have not spoken to anyone for 30 years about this.
Yes.
And I've been carrying it as a shame. I mean, for that long, and it just takes a conversation. How much more when we just can allow truth to be told and allow ourselves to be real, can we liberate? And you know, it's this freedom thing. And there's a Barbara Brown Taylor, I always remember Barbara saying, it's all about freedom.
Yeah.
And for me, that highlights one of my real learnings through the podcast is, I have a tendency to be a bit sort of naive and optimistic and think that life, I really do. It's actually a gift. And it does,
it is a gift.
And it does sustain me through really interesting times. But I think one of the things the podcast has really helped me see is way more clearly the shadow side of religious practice and the toxicity that is often peddled. Because of my upbringing, I didn't get exposed. Well, I got exposed to that stuff, but thought it was a bit hilarious and a bit of a joke. But having spoken with so many people who, as a result of the podcast, who were so deeply formed in that it was their life, and speaking to people like Andrew Cooper about religious trauma and stuff like that has really opened my eyes to how it's not just being optimistic and thinking everything is sweetness and light. There's actually a whole heap of stuff that really does need to be taken head on and called out. And that's part of what, you've just been talking about, is by talking about it is unmasked, the light shone on it, it comes out of the shadows, and it gets dealt with. Mm. And it does then set people free. But yes, it's, for me, it's really honed my sensitivity to the toxic. And then that becomes a self-reflective thing. It's just, what are the things I just take for granted as part of the way we all operate, the way the community operates, the way the church operates. It's actually having that toxic effect that needs to be addressed.
And on the toxic effect that can get us all a bit down, I just want to say the positivity, Peter, like I do have, it's not just me, I have other friends too who say when we get done by and can feel our own cynicism rising up, we need a good dose of Peter Cat to help us with that. So it is a gift. I'm not knocking it at all. But I think, that truth-telling and the freedom also, I mean, one of the biggest pieces for me is about freedom from patterns of dominance and control. And if we're talking about following the way of Jesus, Jesus also spoke out so clearly about, and lived a life that was empowered and resistant to patterns of dominance and control. And yet the church has in many ways down history continued those patterns. And it's part of what I mean, I was particularly inspired by Willie Jennings, and his, and I've done a lot of reading of his work, as well as then, you know, I know it's in an American context, and so we need to, we also read in Australia, thinking about how, what Willie Jennings kind of defines is, I think it's the phrase is something like the deformed architecture of whiteness. And those patterns, and a key part of that is those patterns of dominance and control. And so this comes up in lots of our conversations. And that, that idea of supremacy, which I know Brian McLaren pointed to, as that comes, that is finding a way to a Christianity that's not wrapped up in supremacy. So in, if we're talking about Jesus' way, it was not wrapped, it was as far from that as possible, yet we've kind of packaged our Christianity with ideas of supremacy, dominance, control, a hierarchical universe, and so that's a lot of the conversations around gender too. And
scarcity comes and into scarcity, that.
That's right. And yet in the alternate vision that we're encountering again and again and from different people, is that relational universe. That, and which is the universe where life bubbles up through relationship. Karen Armstrong, I think of, and John Philip Newell, this beautiful image of a God present through, in and through all things in the creation.
Yeah, it's an interesting point as well. Speaking of John Philip Newell and our conversation with him and his work about, I suppose, listening to the voice within and trusting your own sense of the divine that's emerging, not needing to outsource it to somebody else, but trusting it yourself in a sense. I think about, I think it was about 8 or 9, I probably have shared this story, but we used to drive past the mosque on the way home from my church. There was a mosque we'd drive past on the way back. And as an 8 or 9 year old, I remember being horrified by the realization that the Muslims were as sure that they were right as we were, and thinking, but we can't both be. How do we know we're the right ones? And I said that to, I don't know if it was a young youth group leader or a Sunday school leader, but I said it to someone at the church who basically said to me something along the lines, I can't even remember the phrase, but the message I received was, you shouldn't be asking those questions. That's a bad question to ask. You just need to shut up and trust, was basically the message I received. And I think so many of us receive these messages that you don't really know what's going on here. You've got nothing really to offer. So sit down and listen to the people who do, and fall into line, basically. And I think the amount of times that for me personally that I can say that I sat here in a room with the two of you who are, you know, such incredible human beings and this, you know, renowned author or speaker or whatever, and I'd have this thought in my head of, oh, I really want to ask this, but I'm probably going to sound like an idiot now because I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'd ask it, and I half, really must have been 30 times I expected one of you to say, what are you talking about, Dom? You're an idiot. That's so far from the mark. But instead, somebody would go, yeah, no, I know what you mean. And it was such a sense for me of an empowering sense of, oh, actually that voice within me of, you know, guiding me on the way forward, that inner voice, that has always been there. And I've been sort of institutionally trained not to listen to it in all parts of my life. I've been institutionally trained to defer upwards, to doubt it, to listen away from it. And so much of this for me personally has been an encouragement to no, listen to that. Tenderly, gently listen to that, because it has actually got something to say. And I think that's been the most wonderful conversations I've had with listeners to the podcast too, that they'll hear something and they'll say to me, I've always thought that. I've always wondered about that. I didn't know that anyone else felt that. I didn't know that you're allowed to ask that. And so I hope that's one of the gifts that others feel they've received from some conversations as well, that this sense that actually that thing in you that might be guiding you on the way forward that you keep pushing down going, well, what would I know? How would I know? Actually, that part of you is trying to tell you something pretty sacred, and that might be the voice of God at play in your own life.
Yeah, it's the dominance and control thing again. And my experience is there's no such thing as a dumb question, but boy, are there some dumb answers. And those of us who are, you know, we're expected to answer questions. For me, that is the thing that really makes me proceed with caution, is realizing that the question is not dumb, but gee, my answer could be, and I need to be really attentive so that I'm not being trite, not just rehearsing something, and not being unreflective.
Yeah.
And you know, we have that so in so many parts of the of life, we have that idea that the person who comes, joins us, is empty. And it's colonization all over again. We just assume that they're terra nullius and they've turned up at the church to get baptized, or they've joined the workforce. It happens everywhere. And we just assume that they are—they really are an empty space. And our job is to equip them by giving them the information. Not even capacities, but just straight information, and then they'll be right. It's called, you know, the mug and jug sort of idea. Whereas if we have a more relational idea, you know, everyone who walks through the door of the church seeking baptism has a wealth of rich experience that they can gift to us, and insights and questions and experiences that challenge some of the views that we might have held, and we all end up being richer for the experience.
And we're moving too. I'm sure if we go back, and I haven't listened to some of the early ones for a while, but you know that we probably contradicted ourselves any number of times. And we weren't aiming for consistency, because it's about where we are in this context right now, and who is the person with us, and where are they taking us?
That's right. So I've been sitting with a few baptismal candidates as we approach Easter, and I say to them, here are the questions you'll be asked by the Archbishop on Easter morning, and you have to work out whether you're comfortable with what you mean when you say it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And right, I say to them, I could give you what I think I'm going to mean when I get to Easter Day, because I'm going to be answering the same questions for the umpteenth time. I said, but you'll get the 2024 version of the answer today, whereas, you know, 3 years ago you would have got the 2021 version of the answer. And so you really want to have your own, because, you know, I could take you on a really wild journey of what I've actually meant. You know, I think I've talked before about how when the church was experimenting with the liturgy, the first experimental baptismal rite in 1990 took Satan out of the baptismal rite. Do you reject Satan? And I cheered, because I thought, you know, isn't it great to get rid of this anachronistic idea? Do you reject Satan and all evil? So it was just, do you reject everything that's evil? And then when the new prayer book came out in 1995, Satan was back in, and I cheered, because in the 5 years I'd actually discovered René Girard, James Allison, and had developed a really intense understanding of what Satan is. And so I was able to cheer the removal and the replacement of Satan. So don't trust me, because you know, I'm on a journey, and I changed my mind.
Peter, I can't have you say that without asking you to tell me what Satan is to you now. I mean, we got the room, we got time. What's Satan to you? What's the 2024?
I'm sort of stuck on the René Girard idea that Satan is the product and produces mob behavior. Mm-hmm. So it's that thing that when people are part of a mob, at the end of the experience, because, you know, we have all these, and it happens often, you start a peaceful protest and it descends into violence. And Girard says that is the Satan at work, but Satan is produced by, this is where it's sort of like a circular thing, the Satan is produced by and produces the mob behaviour. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually a group, it's a bit like I was talking about before, about how when the three of us interact here, there's like an extra, it becomes its own creation. That's the sort of Girardian idea that people are talking about, when they've been part of a mob, they talk about being carried away by something. And that's one of the understandings of Satan. But
I'll ask you for your 2025 next year.
That's right.
But yeah, no.
Let's do the annual Satan catch up. Who's Satan for you now? Yes. And we'll just sort of, who's God for you now and who's Satan for you now?
Well,
yes.
Yeah, I kind of do need to check in on those though, because they do shift. They do ebb and flow.
Yeah, and it's okay. Thing is, it's okay to shift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I was really comfortable with that as my journey in the 1990s of, you know, cheering when Satan disappeared from the baptismal rite and cheering when Satan came back. And at no point did I think, well, that was stupid or wrong. I could see why my reasons for wanting Satan out, I think, were really legit, because Satan had become something of a caricature figure. Because I discovered a different dimension of Satan, I was okay for it to come back. And that's me going on a journey. And then, you know, who knows, in 10 years' time, I might think, well, actually, just the term itself is problematic because it is associated with sort of gremlins and goblins and things. Maybe there's a better word. So, yeah.
That's because, which is another one of those themes of objective truth,
yeah,
thing, that if we're understanding God as relational, and God is relationship and constantly then, by definition, moving, not an idol that's fixed and static. And so it does mean that what we determine and the things that we discern to be true, you have to, you know, there is very hard. I mean, I could challenge people to say, can you come up with something that is objectively good all the time? And I haven't found that yet in terms of an action or, you know, what's objectively good all the time.
Yeah, that's a good
you
point.
Know, it has to be discerned, which again puts responsibility back on us. And if you believe, as I do, that God is with us and within us and between us, then that responsibility is not me as a solitary individual working it out.
Yes.
It's me in relationship, in context, working it out. And so we are, and that this the church has always been an organization that's moving. And you'll find when it is at its, when it has committed terrible atrocities, it's when it's decided to fix and say this is what it is now. We've got the final truth and we're holding to this, and terrible things often follow, including terrible violence, you know. So we are moving and shaping and discerning relationally all the time.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a good point. I mean, I feel like so much of my journey has been so confidently throwing things out and then metaphorically running to the bin a year later going, oh, actually, I could use that. Not sure about that one, because so many of the things that, you know, it's sometimes, as you were saying, Peter, it's necessary to say, no, it's not this. This has been harmful. Let's move away from this. And then you come back a little bit later and go, oh, actually, there was a different way to view that could fit in. I was wrong. And then maybe a year later, you're back where you started. And I think this idea of this very linear idea that I am here, I'll grow here, and bit by bit, more by more, I'll know more of it. I'll become progressively more sure. And then at some stage down the track, maybe in my last few days, I'll have it all sorted. That just, it's so not how this thing works.
Yeah, and the objective piece is one way that we get it wrong. We try and fixate on something, but we also try to possess.
Yes.
And the church does that too. We try to possess knowledge, try to possess truth. But we even try and look at the impulse. Like, we need to all interrogate ourselves about, yes, the church is a church in mission and in evangelism, but what do we understand by that? And if we understand by that trying to possess as many people as we can and get them into our movement, and you can hear the language I'm using, you know, there, isn't it? And it's that same colonizing impulse to possess and to own, and we've done it to people and we do it in churches. And how do we, so while we stay on this way, how do we watch out for some of these classic minefields where it becomes violent? And one is when we fix it and make an idol. Another is where we have that move to possess and noticing that in ourself. You know, of course, it's linked to greed, you know,
and fear.
Yeah.
And we'd really like to be the number one podcast with as many people following to claim you as our followers.
But I think you're right, Sue. And again, it's the sort of bottom up instead of top down model. It's this sense of listening deeply to, is there still life in this? And where is the life in this? And where is the life in this today? And I mean, the questions, again, as you've said many times, Peter, become so much more important than the answers. I was thinking recently, the answers are where humans are divided. The questions are actually the place we unite. We've all pretty much got the same questions, but the answers are where we lose ourselves. And I always come back to one of the early memories of the podcast for me that enabled me to start breaking some of that stuff open was Greg Jenks when he sat, I think, in the chair you're in right now, Sue. And I was in knots about a particularly horrific part of the Old Testament. And he just says, this biblical scholar says, but what if that part of the Bible's wrong? And I thought, are you allowed to ask that? That's in the rules here? You're allowed to do that? But I think that's the, you know, that's really what I was trying to say was this feels just so far away from everything I know to be true and good about life. And I'm hearing that it's in this book, which means it must be true and good about life. Mm. How do I reconcile this? And him giving the liberation to go, no, listen to the voice in you. That part could be wrong. Mm. And maybe again, as you say, Peter, maybe 5 years' time I come back and read it again and see something in it that is usable. I mean, it's not, nothing's permanently fixed again, but there is this thing of listening to where the life actually is going on in you, honestly actually is going on, and remarkable things happen.
And I think prioritizing, which is another thing that often comes through, prioritizing people over a text.
Yeah.
You know, that when we put the way we've interpreted a text over the well-being of a human being, that's evil.
Yeah.
You know, when we stop giving dignity to every human being and we start saying that group is less than in some way, you know, so that inherent human dignity is one of these touchstones to hang on to, that recognizing whatever gives dignity to you and to me at the same time, we're on the right track here. And it might be, you know, some church traditions that sometimes there's been things when you think about changing your mind, there's been things that I love. And then someone comes in with a very different life experience. And I've set that up in my head as something I'd never change that, because that's so vital and important. Someone comes in with a different life experience and you see it through their eyes in a different, and you have to then question and go, okay. And certainly there are contexts where you go, well, right now we're changing that because that is what, that is the loving thing to do. You know, so how do we preference always the person who's in front of us, and how do we preference their acknowledge always their God-given dignity and that they're made in the image of God, and that includes the challenging part. Of course, we never get away without challenging this stuff. That includes the people we don't like very much. You know, that challenge that constantly faces us, to see ourselves as the one who's being the judge now, ourselves as the one who is casting out now. And you know, Christianity, one of the beautiful things about it, I always say, is it always subverts itself. You know,
and the amount of times in this podcast that I've had this humbling moment of laughing at myself and realizing how little I know. It's genuinely one of the most joyful experiences I can remember having in my life, is when I'll suddenly hear a different perspective and go, oh, that's right, I don't know anything. And I know that sounds simplistic, or it sounds like not what you want. You want to be learning more as you have more conversations. But when you realize how little you know and how much of a gift it is to just surrender into the mystery and listen deeply to someone else's story from a position of total, almost total not knowing, it's so different from everything that, I mean, even you listen, think about the podcast form and how many podcasts are about, we're the ones who've cracked it. Listen, this is how it is. This is how it forms. I almost feel like we're the podcast who has come to say, we don't really know, but we're going to keep having these fun conversations. It's been a very different energy. Again, I keep coming back to the word playful, Peter. That seems to be the word to me that sums a lot of this emergent thing up.
I think it needs to be playful, and it also needs to, one of the great blessings of being people like Peter Klein, who've talked to us about not knowing, and the deep tradition in the church that has occupied, and the gift that it's been of just being open and don't focus on knowing. And once you do, if you get an idea, let it go and see where you go as the mystery embraces you and actually takes you beyond your head. You know, before Sue was talking about getting out of your head, there's a sense in which we actually have got to get beyond our heads as well, because there's way more to this than just having a whole bunch of thoughts and capturing. You know, God is not something to be captured. God is something to be apprehended by. You know, we actually, you know, and it's a complete reversal of what we think the project is about through our desire to possess, control and own, is the idea that we're just going to let go and this other thing is going to be the thing that apprehends us. And then what's going to happen when we apprehend being apprehended. I mean, it's just such a delicious thing. And it is just so not what our culture is on about. You know, our culture is about owning, and you know, I often talk at weddings about how, you know, our culture thinks this is about you taking someone else to be your spouse. Well, actually, the question I'm going to ask you is, do you give yourself away? You know, how kind of culture is that? Are you really prepared to do this? You know, make yourself a gift and see where it goes, rather than, you know, I've got myself a prize. Because we're so driven by that acquisitiveness. You know, the whole culture is about acquiring and owning and calling something mine, that, you know, the real gift of religion is when it actually says, well, actually, that's all wrong. That's a joke. That is a chimera. That is, you're being, you're allowing the culture to dictate what God's going to be like. And the idea that we're then going to own God, and that we can actually, you know, I hear it all the time. We take God places, or we introduce people to God, or no, we don't.
Do you know, this was a breakthrough for me, Peter. I remember a year ago, I had this moment of realizing that language generally comes after, second. So people have an experience of something and then name the experience.
Yep.
And that there was this experience that a lot of people were having, that they ultimately settled on the name God to describe this experience that they were having. But the experience was there before the name.
Yes.
And the experience, whatever element of reality they were experiencing, wasn't just something that just they were experiencing. It was something that was, you know, flowing through the whole thing. And so my, something I've tried to do a little bit at the school I work at is forget the labels if it doesn't work, but let's think about what was it that they were experiencing that they felt they had to name.
Had to name.
And where is that showing up for you right now?
Yeah, and the danger of naming. I mean, it's one of the things we need to be really aware of, is just the danger of naming. Because a name, it's something we do. It's caught up in our, you know, our, one of our early mythological stories. Adam names the creatures. And it's something we do, and it's also something we need to be really mindful of, that by when we name, we contain, and we exclude things that don't fit the name. And we've done it. You know, we've done it with gender. We've done it with a whole lot of. We do it with race. I mean, race doesn't exist biologically, but boy, are we fascinated by it, because we actually say that person is a. And we've actually contained them and separated them in a way that actually biology won't own, but we think we see it really clearly. And so naming can be really dangerous, which is why I love the tradition that actually says, well, the name is too restrictive. Let's just see what we get, what the experience you're talking about. Let's not call it God. Let's just say, let's be open to whatever it is.
Does remind me of that episode, well, the live podcast with Padraig Gotuma, which was just amazing. But he told the story, I've forgotten, I think he'd given a class of children the task to write, now I'd forgotten if he asked them to write something terrible in a poem, I've forgotten the question, but he said this little girl came up with a poem that said, I've taken your dog whom you love, and given it a new name. And the child's instinct to say, what is the worst I could do?
Yes.
You know, and there is that power in naming and controlling.
Yes.
You know, and so much of our faith and spirituality, and no, because we're, I mean, give ourselves a break, we're language is a wonderful thing, and it's the way do connect with one another. Absolutely. But it can get in the way when we are trying to name something that is beyond words. And so often our naming reduces our experience of God, which is why we need things like art and poetry and metaphor, which have also, you know, we as different ways of seeing.
Well, one really exciting thing for this podcast is Peter Catt has promised us for a few weeks too that he's come up with the best definition of God that is absolutely irrefutable, and he's going to share it with us tonight on the podcast, ain't you, Peter?
Is that right?
Yeah. I've been looking forward to it for a week.
Listen to the silence. You need to edit 10 seconds of silence. It's my current definition.
Oh, wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, as we move to wrapping this up, are there any other particular highlights from the years of the podcast that come to mind for either of you that you wanted to share in this, I guess, this chance to reflect on it all?
One of the things that has really blown me away has been the absolute generosity of our guests.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, these people who we all put on pedestals, right? And we approach them and they are prepared to give up an hour or so of their time, sometimes at ridiculous times.
Yes. I mean,
you know, some of them have met with us late at night for them. And I remember Barbara Brown Taylor saying, when we finished with her, "I'm off to get my dinner now." And we all thought, yes. Oh, my hat.
It yeah. was about 8 p.m.
her time. It was 8 or 9 o'clock at night for her. And I thought, and just how generous they have been. Because they are so dedicated to the idea that conversation actually transforms people.
Yeah.
And offering that incredible gift of their presence to us, I'm just constantly amazed. We've really had no one knock us back.
No, no.
We've had one person who wanted a fee and we knocked them back. But,
but, well, that's the thing, because if you all have wondered this, we've not paid for a...
We have not paid anything to anyone.
No, no.
Because they are so committed to this idea that talking about this stuff is really important.
Mm.
And, you know, these are people who make their money out of this. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, they make sure they sell their books and stuff. But they don't... They are so generous because they are really... really dedicated to the project of human flourishing. And I just think that's an amazing gift. Because without them, we would have had a lovely time having, if we'd made 100, we wouldn't probably up to 100 of talking amongst ourselves, because we would have got to episode 57 and said, well, we've said that all before. Or their variations on a theme. And it's really delicious to be here, you know, just the three of us. But we have been so... Mm-hmm. really gifted by the generosity of those people. That's my lasting memory and thankfulness.
And the beauty of these people, talk about faith affirming, that there are people like this. If the faith produces people like the ones we've encountered, you know, what a world it would be if the world was full of them. You know, so many incredible souls who are absolutely authentic. Who they are on the inside is who that, you know, who they are behind the scenes is identical to who they are in their books, and the integrity of these people. So, you know, the opportunity to hang around with them for just a little while has been such a privilege, and just restores my faith in humanity so much.
It's a really good point, Sue, because I know you've said before on the podcast that the simplest way to discern something is its fruits. Mm-hmm. If you're wondering if a pathway, a relationship, a certain belief is actually a good life-giving thing, look to its fruits. Mm-hmm. And the fruits of the people we've met, I mean, there's that common saying in culture, don't meet your heroes. Mm-hmm. Well, we've just about met all of our heroes, mm-hmm. and every single one of them, you know, they jump into the Zoom chat or they come into the room and they're just lovely, and they ask about us and what we're up to. They almost always stay longer than they'd initially planned to stay for. And then they're really lovely at the end of it as well. Sometimes they stick around for another half hour for a post-podcast conversation. It's been it's been without fail. Every single one of them has been exactly the sort of human being that you would hope they might be. It's kind of a remarkable thing in a world of you know, private personas and public personas and whatever else, to encounter these people who aren't just writing these books or living this way, but have actually taken this thing so seriously that it's formed the very human that they've become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It turns out the on the way thing is a deeply transformative journey, in fact.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it feels right to thank all of our listeners profoundly for coming on this journey with us. As Sue said earlier, the messages, the conversations, the support, those who've come to the live podcasts we've done, those who've listened, you know, on the other side of the planet and not made it to a live podcast, and everyone else who's, you know, maybe listened to all 100 or popped in for the first time today, whatever it is, thank you so much for sharing this journey with us. And I feel personally that I need to thank both you, Sue, and you, Peter, that this podcast journey has in ways I think I'll spend the rest of my life making sense of. It has healed me, shaped me, and formed me. And I genuinely don't know in my 30 years if there's been anything quite as impactful on actually making me who I've become as this podcast. So thank you both so much.
And you do know it goes both ways. As much as you've been the one, you've often joked and said you're the layman and asked the questions, the way that you have anchored this has meant that things have been drawn out that would just not have been possible. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Peter and I have had a bit more of the easy ride when you've had more of the anchor chair and we're just so grateful for what it has produced.
Oh. Thank you, Sue. Well, there you go. Everyone wins.
Everyone wins.
We'll stick around. We've got a few episodes coming up with William Paul Young and Brian McLaren from the US, and then Eleanor O'Donnell will be another episode coming soon, and hopefully an old favourite of the podcast joining us to talk about the democratic state of the world shortly as well. So plenty more episodes on the way. Another 100 or so we reckon we got in us as a group, guys. What do you think, Peter?
Well, I've got 87 until I retire.
Well, I look forward to continuing on walking the path. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks.